the environment that we're in, where we live and where we work, it changes us. It has an effect on us. We like to think that it doesn't, right? We like to think like, oh yeah, that stuff happens a lot, but it doesn't really have a big effect on me, right? But we know that like if we were working in a coal mine every single day, that 20 or 30 years from now, like our lungs are gonna look different, right? But we don't like to admit that to ourselves, right? That the place that we spend a whole bunch of time has a way of getting inside of us. And sometimes it's real subtle because it's happening to all of us, right? So here's something that was coming to me the other day that I'm sure you guys can relate to. The house I live in was built in the 60s, and there's plenty of stuff in there that's still from the 60s. And if you've ever been taking apart stuff that was built a long time ago and replacing it with new stuff, you've had this exact same experience probably, right? So my wife was at Cargo Largo and found like 5 super cheap fans that were like a good brand that she liked. So it's like, okay, we've been waiting to replace all these fans in the house. Let's replace them all. So I had a friend of mine come over, help me out. And we replaced these fans all through the house. But as you're taking apart a fan from the 60s, and you're holding that in one hand, and it's just even the motor of that, and then you're holding the entire fan from 2023, you notice something, right? Which one weighs more? The 60s one weighs 3 times as much, 5 times as much, right? You'll notice there's actually a little bit of copper in the one from the 60s, right? There's no copper to be spoken of in the new ones, right? Everything's lighter, right? Now, here's the thing. This is how stuff is built nowadays. And it's not, I'm not even coming with a bunch of judgment on it, but just let's look at it. What happened? There's a lot of countries in the world, but us, Americans, like we're really driving a lot of what I'm about to describe. Like we're not like victims of this. This is what we wanted. Somewhere along the line, you know, it was the 60s or whatever, and people were building ceiling fans that lasted 60 years and that we only take down because they're ugly, right? I mean, like, I'll be shocked if the new ones we put in last 20 years, right? I mean, that would be incredible. But I cannot imagine they will last 60 years, right? Somewhere along the line, people thought, I want to have more and I want to have it for less. And if you do that in small steps over and over and over, somebody takes that ceiling fan and thinks, you know, we had 5 screws, but we could get by with just 3. And this whole thing used to be made of metal, but what if we made a half of it out of plastic? Or what if we made 4/5 of it out of stuff we can't even pronounce, right? You know, like, wouldn't that be great? Right. And so, and it's not all bad. Some really smart, clever people engineer stuff to where it can still work well and be made really cheap, right? They put some thought into it. Although I'm guessing there's a lot less human effort that went into these new fans, there's a lot of technology that went in to build it that cheap, right? Now, if you're around construction people, sometimes they'll complain about stuff and the quality of stuff that's built nowadays. But most of us just think about that when we're holding something heavy from the 60s and then we throw it away and we don't really think about it much more, right? That concept that if we just use enough technology and if we're just clever enough, we can get a lot more for a lot less. That's not just with our ceiling fans, right? Like, that's the coal mine that we're all living in, right? Like, we all have that in our lungs. We're all breathing that stuff in all every day. Like, I could just be a little smarter, and I wouldn't have to work so hard, and I could just have more, right? If I pull in enough technology, then I can have more, right? I come to this quote from Chesterton, G.K. Chesterton. It says, there's 2 ways to get enough. One is to continue to accumulate more and more. The other is to desire less. Now, if you guys saw the Super Bowl, there were a couple of commercials at least that were like pro-Jesus, that And like we're talking about like don't hate people and stuff like that. And I don't know the whole backstory on those, but I had a question with my, I had a conversation with my wife after the Super Bowl of like, can you imagine if every commercial break always was about like virtuous things? Like, wouldn't we just be like a whole different society? Because most commercial breaks are like, you don't have enough, you need more, you're terrible, but you'll be great if you could just have this, right? And so like, what does that do to us, right? It doesn't make us feel like we have enough, for sure, right? One is to continue to accumulate more and more. The other is to desire less. There's this horrible quote from Rockefeller. He's like a super rich guy from 100 years ago. He's like a Bill Gates of the 1920s or whatever. And somebody asked him, how much is enough? And he's super, super, super rich for back then. And he says, just a little more, right? And it's quick. It's like a quick little line. But when you hear that, you think like, oh, man, yeah. Like, we don't just look for, like, super rich people and be like, oh, yeah, those are the happiest, most content people, right? They have all the best relationships and all the most contentment and joy. And yet, we still buy into this idea of, like, more, more, more. And it's not just more stuff in our society, but can I have more enjoyment in this moment? Like, I don't want to ever be bored. I don't want to, we just get like distracted and we can't focus, right? So I want to show this other little clip. Two different type of eating experiences we can have. And we've all had this first one I'm going to describe. This first one is you open a bag of chips, you turn on Netflix, while you pick something and while that little red circle is going, you know, if it doesn't just instantly load, by the time it does load, suddenly your cell phone has like salt and grease on it because somehow like that got into your hand. You've been eating chips, you're looking at your phone, the show's started. You're not really aware of any of the three of them, but they're all happening at the same moment. And at some point, somehow half the chips are gone, right? Like, you're just like, how did that happen, right? So we've all had that experience with eating where like we're so distracted, we can barely take in the experience. And most of us are going through life because this desire to have more, 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 and this belief that like if we're just a little bit more clever, if we just have a little more technology, we can get it easier. It's led us to this state where we have a hard time focusing on anything. We feel like we're in a rush all the time, and we feel spread really, really thin, right? How many people are there? Somebody just rose their hand. I was worried they were asleep, actually. I was just looking at them. They're not. They're here with us. Okay, so I want us to think about a different sort of experience that we could have. I'm going to use this food analogy for just a minute longer, and we're going to dive into the Bible. Because I think a lot of times we get a chance to experience Jesus, but we just give Jesus like we give him like the bag of chips treatment. Like we're kind of like halfway involved, but we're pretty distracted. So what about this? What if somebody told you, here's the best restaurant they've ever been to, and the food's super expensive there, but for whatever reason, you get to be there. And here we got this next little clip. I don't know what super fancy restaurant. I tried to find an image, but like, let's say this is it, right? And when you know that the food costs more than you make in a week, you're not going to eat it like you ate that bag of chips, right? Like, you're going to pay a little bit of attention to what it is. You're going to maybe pay attention to the smell of it. You're going to look at it, actually. Like sometimes we don't even look at our food, right? Like, you're going to actually look at your food. When it hits your mouth, you're going to pay attention to it in your mouth, right? It's a whole different experience. You don't have to spend, like, $1,000 to pay attention to your food, though, right? But it's just something about, like, oh, this is special. I better pay attention to it. Today, I want to challenge us as we're going to read this scripture. It's a beautiful story we're going to read in John. I want to challenge you to treat it like this. Flip to this next slide. We got our passage. I'm going to keep this fancy restaurant thing up there. I want us to approach Jesus like he's worth all of our attention. Like Jesus, there's something going on here I don't want to miss. There's something masterful about this. And so if you got a Bible, please turn to John chapter 12. If you don't have a Bible, you have this opportunity to make a new friend and like get next to somebody who has a Bible, right? There's Bibles right in front of you. I want you to be able to see it because we want to use as many senses as we can, right, to stick with it. If you have to use your phone, you can, but I'm telling you, you'll have an easier time focusing if it's just like the old-fashioned right in front of you on a piece of paper with no notifications. So we're going to read it. I'm going to try to give you some of the heads up. So picture that we're at that fancy restaurant. You've never been there. I'm going to explain what some of like the Italian or French or whatever on the video, like what it means before it comes out so you can appreciate it, right? So here, Jesus is getting ready for his last Passover here on earth. That's because he's about to get put on a cross and die. And this is less than a week before that Passover. Lots of people are after Jesus. They want to kill him. But he decides to spend time with some of his friends, including Lazarus, who, if you've been here for the last month or so, he just recently rose Lazarus from the dead and had this big experience with that family. There's also going to be something talked about, this super expensive perfume, this pure nard. You've probably never heard of that if you didn't grow up in church or something. But what that is back in that culture, they would have this super expensive perfume that the family wouldn't actually use because it was too expensive. They would like put it up as like a main decoration in the house. It'd be like in the center of the mantelpiece is how we might view it, right? It'd be this like treasured family possession. You stick it up there. You don't ever open it because once you open it, like it's in a jar that like breaks to open. So you can't like really save it that way. And when we think of expensive perfume, I'm thinking like hundreds of dollars or something. This stuff was worth close to like a year's wages. So like whatever you make in a whole year, like that's how much this stuff costs, right? So I don't know if that's $20,000 or $500,000 or whatever, but it's significant, right? And Judas is going to come up in the story. Judas is the same guy that betrays Jesus for money. Okay, so that's going to come up later. But I think you kind of know the highlights, but now you're ready. You picture that waiter's coming out. He's about to serve you something important, right? Like John has picked these for us to say these are the best stories about Jesus so you can believe and have life in him, right? So we're going to savor this, right? Let's pray. Jesus, please help us to pay attention to you. Help us to put our eyes on you, Jesus, as we read the Gospel of John. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. So verse 1, 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Verse 2, here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray Jesus, objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth about a year's wages. He did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. As keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Leave her alone, Jesus replied. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. There's a lot in those 8 verses. I mean, we could talk about how you got Martha serving, you have Lazarus just reclining and hanging out with Jesus, you have Mary doing this extravagant act of adoration to Jesus. You got three siblings, and they're all doing totally different things, and it's all good. We don't all have to be doing the same thing at the same moment, right? We can talk about Judas a whole bunch, right? There's judgmental people who might talk one way, and maybe they're even half blind to their own mess, right? But the stuff coming out of their mouth doesn't fit their actions, right? The most important one to focus on anytime we're reading in John is Jesus. The more you look at Jesus and understand Jesus, the more you're going to love him. And I don't know that there's really anything else we have to get right in life, like if we get that right. If you are paying attention to Jesus, if you are inspired and love Jesus, obedience and being a good dad or a good worker or a good son or a good daughter or a good whatever, it's going to flow pretty naturally, right? But it's real easy in life to have so many have-tos, so many things that you can, you know, more, that there's never time to really just look at Jesus. I've been thinking about this passage this week, and I would encourage you guys, we don't have to take huge chunks. If you went to a super fancy restaurant and you tried to eat like 17 things, like it's not going to be the best experience, right? If you would savor one thing off the menu, it'd probably be better, right? You don't have to move quickly through the Bible, but like, did you see Jesus? Do you love Jesus? When I've been thinking on this passage this week, something stuck out to me. Judas's little argument there is there's a more efficient way to help, right? Sounds very much what we were talking about before. Like, we could build these fans cheaper, right? Like, we could be more efficient with our resources if we sold this perfume and fed people with it or something, right? It sounds really good, right? It sounds like Judas is looking out for the people that need help. Lots of stuff that sounds good to us is like evil, right? And Judas is a pretty good spokesperson for evil, right? And as good as it sounds like to help the poor, kind of in quotation marks, that don't really have faces in this scenario, in that exact moment, he's trying to step on the most vulnerable person in the room. Like, why should we help the poor? The poor are very vulnerable. They normally get stepped on and hurt by other people, right? But what is Judas trying to do right in this moment? There's a woman in the room who's with her hair on the floor trying to honor Jesus in a way that is not normal, right? It's like over the top, extravagant. And he's trying to step in and say, like, she's foolish and not a good person. Like, who's the vulnerable person that needs help? It's not this like nameless group of people. It's this woman right here in the room. And Jesus sees it. And so here's what I was thinking as I was thinking about this. This doesn't quite relate, but I was thinking about the vulnerability of Mary in this scene. I don't know if you guys have ever like gone over the top to try to be good to somebody else or to be thoughtful or kind. But in that moment, you know, when you've shown up with the flowers or you built this thing for somebody or whatever, if you're watching their face for like, how's this going to go, right? Because it feels really vulnerable to put yourself out there. I can remember being a second grader, and my best friend at the time went out of town for a week. And we were in my little classroom, Miss Cherry's classroom. She had this box of cardboard with all these little mail slots, and you could send mail to each other like in the classroom, right? You could go put little notes for each other. This came back to me like vividly, so sorry to take it to you, but when I was reading this, it came back to me of a specific thing I did as a little 8-year-old or 7-year-old or whatever. My friend Ryan was out of town for a whole week, and I thought I missed him, which is like sounds, I don't know. This all just sounds silly as you talk about it, but I missed Ryan. So I wrote him a note, and then I thought like, oh, it'd be cool if he came back and it's like full of notes. So every day that he was gone, and this is a little tiny box, I put a note in it. Well, I can still remember. So I don't remember much as from my second grade year, but I still remember Ryan got back. His thing is the only thing that's like full of notes. So he curiously like goes up there. But then he realizes like every single note is from me. And it's like, that's kind of weird, you know? Like, that was the expression. Like, that's the expression on his face. Like, he didn't say anything. I didn't say anything. Like, I'm watching him from, like, a few rows back. And I just felt like such an idiot in that moment. You're like, why did I do that? That was just way too much, right? Mary, when she is poured out the most valuable thing, the thing that she didn't sell all those times when money was tight, when she pours it all out on his feet, she's very much at risk for that, like a much higher level of that same feeling that left a mark on me in second grade, right? Like if Jesus would give any sort of even like positive facial expression to Judas, it's gonna be like crushing to her, right? Like we know how it is to like really put yourself out to somebody, and if it doesn't, if they don't respect it or honor it, it just, it's crushing, right? It's like somebody stepping on a flower or something, right? It like hurts. Now, my little second grade experience, I got over it. Obviously, I mean, I still remember it, I guess. But like, got over it, wasn't that traumatizing. But this thing is a really big deal, right? And Jesus sees you. He saw Mary. He saw through all Judas's stuff. But the thing that needed to be answered right then wasn't some big argument about, like, Judas, you're a hypocrite, and I'm going to insult you, and blah, 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 blah. Mary needed to be defended. She needed to be honored. Jesus wasn't just worried about being right. He wasn't just worried about fixing every single person in the room. He knew what was most important in that moment. And he does it super well, right? And he does it as only Jesus can, right? He says, leave her alone. And then he says, like, it was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. Does anybody even understand what he's talking about in that moment? Like, nobody really clicks in that he's about to die. Jesus is okay with being misunderstood in the short term. Because there's this big payoff, I'm sure, for everybody who remembers that a week later. They're like, oh. Like when he was on the cross, some people think like his feet might have still smelled of that perfume. I mean, I don't really have any idea if that's right or not, right? But like, certainly this statement made an impact on some of the folks that heard it. Because they realized like, oh, none of us understood it. But that lady who was so in love with Jesus, she did the right thing. Not because she understood it, but because she loved Jesus so much. And you don't have to understand the future if you will love Jesus so much and let that drive you. You'll do the right thing. And Jesus might be telling you something right now that you don't understand. And he's okay that you don't understand it, right? He's totally fine with us not understanding. As long as there's a reason for it down the road. And then he says this statement about, oh man, this one is such a good one to like put everybody in their place. You will always have the poor among you. Here's this idea Jesus is getting at. Like, he's been God for thousands of years. He's provided the earth with like plenty of ability to grow food and to do all sorts of stuff. And what do we as humans do? We keep making systems where there's a whole bunch of poor people, right? Jesus is like, if people really wanted to solve the poor issue, like you've had plenty of chance to do it in the past, and I know you well enough, you're going to have plenty of chance to do it in the future. Like, don't drag in this like, oh, we really want to help poor people right now as we crush this poor woman right in front of us, right? So Jesus is like able to put everybody in their place, and then as only God can, people that say like Jesus is just a good teacher or a nice man, no nice man says what Jesus says right here. You'll always have the poor among you, but you'll not always have me. I mean, dads in the room, if your daughter went on a date with some guy that talked like that, you'd be like, oh my goodness, you know, like, get this guy away. He's so full of himself, right? Only someone worthy of worship can say something like that, right? That, like, I'm worth pouring out all these, this beautiful thing. I'm worth pouring it all out on my feet. Like, Jesus is standing up and saying, like, I'm worthy of all this. So there's, like, masterfulness in Jesus that, like, when you sit with it, just like you would, like, a ribeye steak, like, you pay attention to it, right? They might put a little bit of salt and pepper on it, right? But they don't put a whole bunch of stuff on it, right? Because they want you to be able to taste what's actually there, right? You don't have to put a whole bunch on what Jesus does. You want to pay attention to what's there. Jesus very quickly, like, handles the immediate moment. He handles what his disciples need in the short term. And he handles what we need in the long term. And he does it in, like, two sentences, right? In a moment. You start to look at, like, how he does stuff, and you just, it's hard not to think, like, oh, you're better than me. You're better than anybody I've ever been around. It becomes easier to trust him. It becomes easier to do things for him because you love him. Now, I want to show you another slide, and I want to talk to you about a quote before we get a chance to have a response here. So, quick slide here. If you have your schedule so full this week that when you're driving home, you're listening to something and you're thinking about something else and you're driving 10 miles over the speed limit or maybe like 7 or something because you figured out like they won't pull you over for 7 or whatever it is. Like, if that's how you're acting on the way home on Monday night and there is an incredible sunset, just like there was an awesome sunrise this morning, right? The sky looked like bronze, right? God could do something beautiful, and you won't have room for it. You will not stop and give him any adoration. You might think, like, oh, that's cool. You'll do, like, the Lay's potato chips version, right? Like, I'm paying attention to three other things as I'm taking in something God made. So if you're maxed out and super busy, there's no room to do what we did today, to pay attention to Jesus. I want to go back to that quote to Chesterton, and then I'm going to have the worship team come up. We're going to end a little bit differently today. We took kind of a negative view at this, but I want to kind of turn this quote on its head. So Jesus says you can't serve two masters. You'll be devoted to one and not the other. And he says you can't serve both God and money. And if you view this quote through, like, the money lens, you can see that, like, oh, yeah, if we just try to get more and more and more money, it's a pretty rough road to contentment, and we should desire less. That would be better for us, right? But what if we flip this quote and we say, what if the thing we're after isn't money or possessions? What if the thing we desire is God? Because you could take this quote and say, man, what if I was like Rockefeller, but not towards money? What if I was like Rockefeller and said, just a little more? What if every day you said, how much Jesus is enough for me today? And you said, just a little more. What if you had the same sort of greed that some of these people will have for money? What if you had that same sort of drive for more of Jesus? To say, I don't desire less. I'm only content if I can have a little more Jesus than I had yesterday. I'm chasing more and more and more. If we desired one thing, one person, more every day. So guys, we're going to worship. And if you have to go, that's okay. You can do it respectfully. But we wanted to end with a chance to just have worship and put our eyes on Jesus again, respond again. If you've got kids and you need to pick them up, you can go pick them up, but you guys are free to linger here as long as you want or to even get kids and bring them back.
So if you got time, this is a beautiful time just to be with Jesus. To pour your heart out and let him pour his heart back into you. If you're hungry, You know you need to be satisfied by Jesus and the power of his resurrection. We're going to sing this together. Because there's no place I'd rather be, sitting at your feet. There's nothing.